I was running a race and I was power walking up a hill and walking past people who were trying to run. And I thought to myself, you do realize I'm walking past you right now, right?
Dizwins Radio episode 591 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know that today's episode is sponsored by my good friends over at DKMS, which is a nonprofit organization who is doing everything they can to fight the fight against blood cancer and blood disease. And they need our help, quite frankly. And it's pretty easy, pretty painless, pretty simple process. All you need to do is head over to DKMS.org. And request that they send you a swab kit. And what the swab kit does, it's a couple of basically like Q-tips. You swish them around the inside of your mouth. Send the thing back, all postage paid. Nothing that you have to worry about other than making sure it gets back into the mailbox. And they'll take that information, a little saliva sample, and put it into a registry. And if there comes a situation where somebody who has blood cancer or another blood disease that needs some help, and you're a match, they'll contact you and work out the details and the arrangements to help you potentially, and quite possibly, be the difference of saving a life of somebody who has blood cancer or blood disease. So once again, DKMS.org is the website, and you can also text the word AMAZING, that's AMAZING, to 50555 to get some more information and find out about all the great things that DKMS is doing. So without any further ado, it is now time to dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is someone who knows a few things about long distance training and racing. He's finished multiple Ironman triathlons and also, additionally, multiple 100-mile, just runs, just quote unquote, just 100-mile runs. So clearly he's no stranger to pushing his limits and probably suffering a little bit along the way as well. Additionally, he's also passionate about fueling his body for performance, but also making sure that the food that he eats actually tastes good, which sometimes, can be a fine line when it comes to eating healthy. So we've got a lot of things to talk about today between just obviously his racing and his endurance feats, but also maybe a little bit of dietary talk as well with a plant-based endurance athlete, Mr. Jason Bahamundi. So thanks for joining us today, Jason. Really appreciate it, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Yeah, certainly. And guys, if you want to find out more about Jason and what he's up to, the website, which isn't necessarily updated super often, but there's definitely a lot of recipes there. So if something that we talk about strikes your fancy, check out cooktraineatrace.com. And on Instagram and Twitter, well, actually slightly different between the two. On Instagram, the handle is the same as the website, at cooktraineatrace. And on the Twitter, he ran out of characters, so it's at cooktraineatrace without an A. So it's R-C-E at the end. Everything else is spelled out like it should be, cooktraineatrace. RCE on the Twitter. And as always, we'll have everything linked up in the show notes for today's episode, so you can find the links, the contact information, anything else we talk about at disruns.com/591. So, Jason, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple question that sometimes has a pretty simple answer, and sometimes, boy, it's like pulling teeth to try to get somebody to nail down their answer to this question. And with you being a multi-sport athlete as well, that adds a whole other layer of complexity, but I'm just going to throw it out there, and we'll see where it lands. What is your favorite distance to race and why?
I think the 100-mile trail race is my favorite distance to race for a handful of reasons. One, it always strikes fear in me when I get to the starting line because there are so many things that can and will go wrong over the course of, somewhere between 19 and 30 hours. Whereas racing long course Ironman, there are things that will go wrong, but, having done it repeatedly and understanding the different sports and changing, from swimming to biking to running, so muscle groups, it's going to sound ridiculous. It seems to be easier, right? But the idea of running for 100 miles, repetitive use of the same muscles, seeing the sun come up, seeing the sun go down, and hopefully avoiding the sun coming up again. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I took up umbrage to Emily when she said that when I listened to her podcast. I immediately texted her and said, I don't ever want to see the sun come up a second time. But I think the 100-miler, because it still strikes fear in me when I get to the starting line, because I just don't know what's going to happen, especially when you're out on the trail, roots, rocks. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything is out there that can really cause a race to go sideways.
Yeah, and as somebody who doesn't do much trail running, although I've certainly been dabbling in it more and enjoy the opportunities I get out to be on the trail, that's definitely one of those things that I don't think us more predominant road racers think about that often. You know, every once in a while we have a little, you know, break in the sidewalk or something like that that we have to deal with, but mm-hmm. but every step on the trail is potential for something to get you, whether it's, like you said, a root, a rock, something. So
I think the other part of that too is the mental aspect of trail running, because of the roots and the rocks and everything else that's taking place. You have to really stay focused. I mean, running a marathon, yeah, you're going to be focused running 10Ks, 5Ks, those distances on the road, but you're not spending the mental energy,
right,
to look out for the next tree, the next root, the next rock, or even the next athlete in front of you on a single track that you've got to try to figure out, can I get around them? Am I going to just hang out back with them and run with them? Is their pace good enough for me? So you just, there's a lot of mental energy that gets expended when you're running on the trails as well.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, and something I feel like I've probably talked to folks about a time or two, but something that we haven't necessarily really focused on as much. And I'd love to maybe stay here for a couple minutes, because everybody who listens to the show regularly knows that the mental side of things sometimes for me can. Well, not sometimes, most often is a hurdle that I'm still trying to figure out how to go over routinely. Every once in a while, I feel like I get it right, but more often than not, I'm that guy that's tripping over the same issue over and over and over again. It's the space between my ears. How mm-hmm. do you dial in for the course of a 100-mile race? Because, like, you know, if you're doing a like you said, a marathon or even an ultra, but it's on the road, you can kind of space out a little bit and just let your feet do what they do and not have to worry too much. But on the trail, like you said, you got to be focused on every step from the start to the finish because of the uncertainty. How do you keep your focus and your mental strength and mental endurance that long? Well, not to mention the fact that you're also running 100 miles, so there's a whole lot of physical strain going on as well.
Yeah, that's a great question, and there's multiple answers to that. One is, I'll ask the question back to you, right? How do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time.
Right.
So running 100 miles, the motto is, I'm not running 100 miles, I'm running 1 mile 100 times. Mm-hmm. And so I can mentally process, I'm only going 1 mile. I do spend time looking at the maps of the events to see where the aid stations are, and then just mentally process that aid station to aid station, aid station, aid station to aid station. So the next time I'll be able to have two Oreos, the next time I'll be able to have Pringles, the next time I'll be able to have Gatorade or whatever it may be, and just focus on that as opposed to the large event as a whole. And then if that fails me at some point, because it will, I just count, believe it or not, I just count. And I start doing multiplication tables and math, because that'll distract me from what's happening out there. Try to calculate paces, you know. If I like to finish this race in, so for example, Rocky Raccoon 100, my goal for the last 3 years has been to break 19 hours there. And so when I'm out on the course, when the watch beeps, I look at the time, how many miles do I have left, and start doing the math. And before I know it, because math doesn't come easily when you're 30, 40, 50 miles right into the race, you're a half mile down the road before you realize you've just run a half mile trying to figure out the math behind it. So do a lot of math out there on the course. And then when I pick up pacers, it becomes a carrot. They become the carrot and I'm just chasing it. And so I allow my pacers to dictate everything. Power hiking, power walking, running, downhill, descending, time to eat, all of that stuff. I just remove my brain from having to work at that point and let them make those decisions. And it has allowed me to have some fairly successful events.
Yeah, certainly, and something that I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more as we go, some of those successes as well. Going back to the original answer there, the 100 miles on the trail, do you prefer a point-to-point type of trail race, or do you like loops, or does it matter that much to you one way or the other?
I prefer loops. Yeah. Just because I'm coming back to the same spot, so I can do the math in my head. I know here I am. I just saw this twig. I do ridiculous things like, okay, that's the last time I'll see that rock on this loop, right? And then just be able to keep running. Point to points, hopefully, I'll be able to experience one in almost exactly a year from now at Western States if my chips get counted properly. So I'll probably have a better answer for you then because of the event itself.
Right.
But I just enjoy doing loops. Like even at Ironman, when I've raced in Texas in 2012 and 2013, their marathon was three essentially 8-mile loops. And I preferred that to Arizona back then was also three loops. But I preferred that back then to two loops just because it was a shorter distance and it was just easier for me to mentally process.
And I'm sure kind of going back to the you know, eat the elephant one bite at a time, run 1 mile 100 times, that also makes it a little bit easier to chunk it instead of, you know, point to point. You still got, you know, you've got 90 miles to go, 80 miles to go or whatever. It's like, no, if there's a loop, it's whatever it is, you know, if it's six loops or whatever, it's like, all right, you know, five loops left, four loops left. It just maybe makes that process a little bit easier too.
Exactly. I think it was 2013. We were racing Ironman Texas. Again, it was a three-loop course. I was on my first loop, and the guy I ran up on was on his second loop, and we were chatting, and he's like, man, this is killing me. I'm like, you got to look at it as a 5K. You probably ran the first one, and you're like, woohoo, I'm off the bike. Check me out. Second loop, which is like the second mile of a 5K, you're like, this sucks. Why are we out here? It hurts. So get through this loop, and we were pretty close to the end of loop two. And then at loop three, you're done. You're on your way home. So just think about it that way. I saw him after the race and he was like, that was a great advice. Appreciate it. I'm like, you gotta trick your mind sometimes into doing these things to make it easier.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Shifting gears slightly, how did you get into the endurance sports scene to begin with? Is that something that's always been part of your life or when did that kind of come onto your radar?
Yeah, I played sports growing up, the typical American sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football. And then life happens like it does to many of us. Become an adult, you get a job, you forget about things. My ex-wife worked for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, so you can see where this is going. And she said, hey, we need to become part of team and training. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know about this we stuff. that ain't ever happening. But she convinced me to do it. And I think this was 2008 or 9. I can't remember. But anyway, I took my first trip to a track and I ran a fourth of a mile, 400 meters, almost passed out, walked, then ran, then walked. And that's how it all started back then. And then it just became competitive, a way to – okay, well, I did 1 mile. How do I do a little bit more? Okay, how do I do a little bit more? The ultra endurance, the long course stuff was never really a part of the plan, in all honesty. I started blogging right before my first 70.3 at Oceanside, which was 2011, April. And I met a bunch of guys online who were blogging as well. And one of them a few years later was like, hey, we're going to run this 100-mile race in the Pacific Northwest. And I was like, well, y'all have fun. That ain't never happening. And it got canceled. But then he said, hey, let's do this 50-miler. It's right here in Huntsville, Texas. And I was like, yeah, I could do that. I could process that. And I loved it. I absolutely loved the 50-miler. Registered for Lake Martin 100-miler out in Alabama. And that was almost the end of all things 100-mile races. It was awful, man. It was awful. I think 80 people started and I think like 18 people finished.
Wow.
It was awful. I mean, it rained. It's just so bad. But anyway, so it was just about, you know, became part of my DNA, I guess. And I realized that I'm more of a candle than a match. So the 5K, 10K stuff kind of went away. Sprint triathlon, Olympic triathlons went away. And it just became, let's do long course stuff. Anything that's going to take me, you know, 6 to 24 hours, I'm in. Let's sign up and let's go see what we can do.
Do you have, and maybe this is kind of like the, you know, akin to asking which of your children is your favorite one, but do you have a preference between the long course triathlon and the long course, long ultra marathon distance races? Or, I mean, I know you kind of touched on them a little bit at the beginning, but if you had to pick one or the other, could you, or would that be a tough one?
Yeah, I mean, if so, my wife did say you get to only race one Ironman a year, and so I use that as my fall race, I guess, so to speak. And so the 100-mile ultra run became my winter race. And so if I had to rank them, I'd say the 100-mile race would be first, then the 140.6 distance Ironman, and then I would say 100K. And 50-mile ultra running before I got down to the 70.3 Ironman distance.
Wow, it's those numbers just kind of still blow my mind. I've dabbled into the 50K area of running distance and haven't dabbled into anything of the triathlon distance yet. But you know, it's one of those things where it always blows my mind when people, you know, are like, yeah, you know, the longer the better, because I just feel like it's such a, I don't know. It's just something I struggle with. Maybe it's that mental thing coming back to haunt me again, where, you know, I can handle 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours. But once you start getting longer than that, like, oh my goodness, like it's just, you know, it's easy to say one bite at a time, but man, sometimes when you're out on the course, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. In all reality, they all hurt, right? Mm. It doesn't matter. If you're running a 5K as hard as you possibly can,
yeah.
It hurts. There's an acute pain to it. And so if I know that it's going to hurt, I would rather deal with the dull, longing pain, like a 50K or a 100-mile race, versus that acute pain, which, again, it'll last 20 minutes and it'll go away right after that. But still, it's just that I can't wrap my mind around that kind of pain.
Right.
So it's just, you know, your makeup and who you are. And I'm thankful that I was able to find my way into these long course races, where the dull, lingering, long-lasting pain is something I figured out I can handle versus that acute stab in the legs pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the beauties of our sport. And I've said this to many folks, and I'll continue to say this, that just because, you know, what's torturous to one is perfect for the other. And you know, the beauty of our sport is that there's no shortage of options. Distance, terrain, elevation, temperature,
locations.
I mean, yeah, there's so many options out there that you just got to find what works better for you. And if that long grind, slow burn, ache and pain is your thing, then you've got no shortage of options. And if you're one of those crazy people that likes the 5K, which I'm right there with you, that's way too short and too fast. But if you're one of those crazy people that likes the 5K, there's no shortage of those options either. And everything in between is also well represented. So, one thing that I found interesting, and would love to hear this story a little bit more, Jason, is that there was a race. I don't remember if it was last year or in the not too distant past, a Rocky Raccoon race, if memory serves, that you finished first in the age group and had no idea that you were at the top of the podium. You know, I don't know of a better way to ask the question other than to just kind of, you know, throw it out there and see what happens. But did you have any idea that you were close to the front before you found out that you won after the race was over? Or did you, I mean, again, your mind kind of checks out on those longer races sometimes, or it can, but how did that whole situation play out?
Yeah. So Rocky Raccoon, as I mentioned earlier, is a race that I've had for the last 3 years, a goal of breaking 19 hours. 3 years ago, I ran 19:20 or something like that. Then I ran 1911, and a year in between I ran 20 something, because 2 weeks prior I ran Coldwater out in Arizona, and so it was always been a goal to break 19 hours once I realized that, hey, it's something that's conceivable. And so that's what I did. I went out there with the idea and the thought process of breaking 19 hours. At one point during the race, like all these long races, I tend to forget to drink enough and get dehydrated. And so when I picked up my pacer, Greg, after 50 miles, which, by the way, they changed the course this year from 5 20-mile loops to 4 25-mile loops. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, I think we can do this. And I was like, well, let's see. Cause I was like, I'm a little dehydrated, and we started running and we finished the loop and it felt good. picked up my second pacer, Brian, and we started running. And you start to see faces. You start to see, because they are loops, you start to recognize people. And I just told Brian, let's just run. We were about 3 miles from the finish. And I saw a couple of guys ahead of me. And again, it's loops, so maybe those guys were on their third loop. I was on my fourth loop. And I'm like, let's just take them down. Let's just run and get this over with more than anything else. We crossed the finish line. I think it was like 1920 something or other. So I was a little disappointed that I didn't break 19 hours. And 20 minutes is not a long time when you're looking at the course of 100 miles. So I was disappointed. Body wasn't functioning real well. Clarity was not there. They gave me a seat in front of a heater. My wife and my pacers and buddies were there, and I asked, how did I do overall? Because I knew the year before, finishing in like 1911, I was in like the top 20. And, so I was like, well, maybe I'm in top 20 again, top 15. The lady at the scorer's table at the timing area said, finished in first place. And I remember her saying that, and all my buddies and the crew and everybody's going crazy around me. And my wife's like, hey, first place. And I'm like, who's in first place? Who finished in first place? And she's like, you. I go, that's not right. That's not possible. As it turns out, I finished first place in my age group. I think it was 12th overall. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of blocks got checked off as far as goals. Finishing first was never a goal, but just being able to be in the top five of the age group, but also being in the top 15 of overall. And then, just finishing in first place was fantastic. After it started to make sense and my mind started to be able to process it.
Gotcha. Does that, for lack of a better way of saying it, I need to stop saying that. Speak for a living. I gotta start coming up with good ways to say things. But for lack of a better way of saying it, does finishing first in your age group in a race, and like you said, checking off some boxes of top 15 overall and things like that, does that change how you attack other races? Does that ever kind of creep into your mind, or almost like have some folks in running and in other industries where that little taste of success, then like they maybe put more pressure on themselves, or it becomes, instead of being something that's fun and that you enjoy, and yes, you're competitive because you have goals, but like you almost start to feel more pressure because of it. Has that changed anything for you, or is running in triathlon still the same as it was before, that first in the age group experience?
Man, that is a really, really good question, and one that I've honestly fought for ever since that day in February. I put a pretty aggressive race calendar together for myself, which typically doesn't happen. After the 100-miler, I typically go into hibernation and then wait until June rolls around to start training for an Ironman. But this year, I said, well, let's go race in March. Let's go race in April. Let's go race in May. And well, I wouldn't say I put out extra pressure. I went into those races saying, okay, I want to finish in the top, whatever that may be. I had a really successful trail running season, except for one race down in Austin, Texas, where I ran my heart out, man. I was in zone four the whole way. It was a 30K race. And man, I finished and I was like, okay, I'm exhausted. I should be okay. Maybe top 15. And I looked at the at the results and I was in 28th place. Mm-hmm. And that was a real good smack in the face of humble pie.
Right.
Because in the races in March and May, I finished in April, I should say, I finished in like the top 10, top 15 there. And so it became sort of like, hey, if you could do it once, you could kind of keep doing it over and over again. And I had a successful season, but I don't know that I put any extra pressure on myself. Now, if we talk again in February of 2019, going into next year's Rocky Raccoon, it might be a different answer. It might be a different answer. Having accomplished finishing in the top 15, maybe I say top 12, maybe I say to myself, well, it's top 10.
Right.
What do I got to do to be in the top 10? And so there might be some added pressure there. Fortunately enough, because it is a 100-mile race, you do have to pace yourself out of the gate. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be an extra long day. And so maybe that tempers it. But that's a really good question and one that I kind of tossed around going into those races in the early part of this year. I won't feel that way going into Ironman Chattanooga, which is the Ironman I'm racing this year. The guys in my age group are just so fast.
Right.
It's not even an option. The goal for that race will be to break 4 hours on the marathon course. I've done sub 4 hour marathons at Ironmans twice. And when we raced Chattanooga in 2014, I finished in 4:02 on the marathon course. So I'd like to break 4 hours there. And when you heard me say we, I really do believe that this is a we sport. From friends and family around us to the people that I go to races with and everything else. This is, while my name might be listed in the results page by myself, it's definitely not something I do on my own, not even close.
Yeah, I think that's something that we can all relate to. If you're any type of endurance training where, you know, it's a team sport with whether it's friends, whether it's partners, whatever it is, with watching kids and taking care of things and you know, just the amount of time that goes into training, it's yep. definitely a wee thing for sure. I wanna ask you one other kind of endurance related question, or at least one that I have right now. But first, I just want to take a quick second and pay a couple bills here, Jason, and thank and shout out to DKMS for continuing to sponsor and support the show. Once again, guys, DKMS is an international not-for-profit organization that is all about helping to fight the fight against blood cancer and or different blood disorders. And you know, I've mentioned the stats before. I'll mention them again. Every 3 minutes, someone in the U.S. is diagnosed with a blood disease, and every 9 minutes, someone dies because of it. So it's something that maybe we don't hear as much about as far as some other cancers that are out there, and not saying one is more important than the other, but you know, this is a real struggle for people every single day. And if you by going through DKMS, what they do is they help to put a pool of potential marrow donors together, which can be the difference between life and death for somebody who has blood cancer. So the process of getting screened and getting in the pool is super simple. All you got to do is head over to dkms.org and they'll send you a free kit that you know with the Q-tippy like things. You swab the insides of your cheeks to your mouth, you send it back, all postage paid, nothing you have to worry about, and then they you know, put you in the database, and if you match up with a donor, they'll contact you and about the possibilities of going forward and helping to save a life. So dkms.org is the website, and if you want some more information, text AMAZING, that's AMAZING, to 50555. Again, text the word AMAZING to 50555 for more information and find out what it takes, and it's really not that much to help save a life. So thank you to DKMS for their continued support of the show, and you guys for continuing to support what they're doing and, you know, potentially saving a life in the future. So Jason, you mentioned that the goal for Chattanooga is to run a sub 4 hour marathon. And I've asked this question to Ironman athletes before. And, it's, you know, again, probably not the greatest question because the answer is somewhat so obvious, but, what is the difference between running a marathon after you've already done the 2.4 mile swim and the 114 mile bike ride versus just, you know, lining up and running a marathon without doing the whole triathlon bit beforehand? Like, other than the fact that, again, you're doing all that beforehand, but you know, again, terrible question, but I'll just ask it and see where it goes. How much different is that marathon at the end of a triathlon versus a standalone race?
I've never cried in pain after the end of an Ironman race. I've cried in tears of joy, but after running a 3:31 in Vegas a number of years ago, I cried in pain. So I think that's a good enough description for people to understand. Marathon, standalone marathons, you're 0 to 60 and you hold it for 26.2 miles. Mm-hmm. So there's speed work in there and there's strength work in there. I think the marathon at the Ironman race is about leg strength. The person who has stronger legs and can hold a particular pace for a longer period of time is obviously going to finish first. So it becomes about leg strength. And that's why I also think that ultra trail running, 50-100 mile races help and play a big factor in being able to run, for me, a sub 4 hour marathon after having already swam for 2.4 miles and cycled for 112. I've finished 7 Ironman distance races. The first four I ran in the vicinity of 402 to 409. So the goal became obviously to break 4 hours. Once I started trail running, I broke 4 hours twice, probably would have done it in 2017 as well, had and everybody who's listening to this would understand GI issues. And so no matter how well you train, if you don't take care of that, it's going to be a long day. But yeah, so I really just think it's a different mental. Again, it's mental. It's a different concept going from 0 to 60 for a standalone marathon and really racing it and trying to finish as fast as you possibly can with again, that 60 mile an hour speed time frame in mind, whereas the Ironman marathon is a gradual build. Most people will say you can't negative split the Ironman marathon. It's possible, but it's just you're not going out as hard and as fast as you can, and then holding and sustaining it. So I think that's the difference. And again, it goes back to the acute pain. Now, 26.2 is longer than a 5K, obviously, right. But if you can handle that for the marathon distance, standalone, then yeah, you're gonna do really well. Whereas I think the Ironman distance, the Ironman marathon is really about strength, leg strength. Do your squats, kids.
Yes, 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 yes. Whether you want to do an Ironman or just a marathon, the squats are going to be beneficial for the last handful of miles in any race, even the shorter stuff. Shoot, some strength, yes. Some explosiveness is always going to be helpful. You mentioned at the beginning, in the introductory question answer there, of the idea that, you know, with the triathlon, you're hitting different disciplines. So yes, it's a, mm-hmm. a cumulative fatigue effect, but you know, the swim is different than the bike, is different than the run, versus the longer running events. Obviously it's just the same motion over and over again. And how that maybe that helps you a little bit because you're hitting your body differently. I'm curious if you found that also to be true with some of, you know, maybe to a lesser extent, but with some of the trail racing that maybe you've done that's specific to just running, but with changes in topography of the course. So with some mm-hmm. hills and some uphills, some downhills, some flats, because I feel like, and I've coached some runners that have said this, where, you know, like they sign up for a race because it's advertised as flat and like, this is my chance to go fast, maybe hit the Boston qualifier, maybe hit the PR. And then afterwards, it's kind of like, God, I wouldn't have minded a couple of hills just to change uh-huh. things up a little bit. Have you found that also to be true?
Absolutely. Give me a hillier course on the run at the ultra distance versus a flat distance. I'll give you a perfect example. While Rocky Raccoon is not Leadville or any of those types of races where you have 10 to 15,000 feet of elevation gain, it does have a change in its topography. And so you are using different muscles. Your strike, your foot strike is going to be in different places at different angles as well. And I have recovered fairly quickly after racing the 100 miles at those, at that course. Mm-hmm. And by fairly quickly, I mean less than a week. Whereas Brazos Bend, which is a little further south, is pancake flat. I mean, literally pancake flat. And all, you can't see this, but I'm putting in air quotes. All I did was pace for 37 miles there. And my feet and my ankles and my knees were in more pain because there's just constant repetitive striking in that same area over and over and over again for hours upon hours upon hours. So yeah, give me a course that changes grade, that changes uphills, downhills, different rocks, roots, mm-hmm. anything like that, because it helps change your foot strike. It changes the angles in which you're landing. It changes the muscles that you're using. And in all honesty, the ability and the opportunity to power hike and walk is always welcome as well. So that when you start to run, when you reach the apex of that climb, you can start to run again and your muscles have had a moment to recover a little bit.
That is, as per usual, you know, somebody says something, I have to latch onto it for a second. Was that acceptance of it's okay to power hike a little bit? It, like, because again, coming from a roadrunner background, like mm-hmm. it's always, you know, there's kind of a unspoken in some circles where it's like, if I'm not running, it doesn't count. You know, if it doesn't matter how steep the hill is, it doesn't matter how tired I am. Like if I stop to walk, I'm cheating myself. I'm giving up or whatever. Did you ever experience any of that type of feeling? And B, what, if so, was it a struggle to get over that and accept that, hey, you know what? Sometimes, like you said, hiking up this hill, you're going to get up there pretty much equally as fast as if you tried to run it, with the added benefit of, like you said, your muscles get a little break. Now you're fresh and you can bomb down the hill if the terrain allows it afterwards, much easier than if you tried to force yourself to keep running for little to no time gain by the time you reach the same point of the apex of the hill.
Yeah, I learned quickly, or I should say early in my ultra training, that walking was more beneficial than trying to run up hills, and really saw it when I ran my first 50 miler, and saw guys that were, let's put them in the category of elite, walking in certain areas. And then it really hit home when I was running a race and I was power walking up a hill and walking past people who were trying to run. And I thought to myself, you do realize I'm walking past you right now, right? And you're trying to run up this hill. So whether you're running up the hill or walking up the hill, the goal is to get up there as fast as you can. And so for me, learning how to power hike, and I do, I train power hiking. I'll get on the treadmill, set it at 11, 13, 15% grade and power hike. And then have it drop down and do mile repeats. And so that's a skill that has to be practiced like anything else, you know, included in your fartleks and your Monagettis. Go out there and power hike and get that as part of your training program. And I think it really does help me. And then mentally, the motto when I'm running on trails is run when you can, walk when you must, and cascade down the hills. And so I just keep repeating that to myself over and over again. And it becomes a scenario in which, okay, I have to walk now. So it becomes something that's a little bit easier to accept. But yeah, look, unless we're Ian Sharman or Sarah McRae, there's a very good chance you're going to have to walk on one of these long course races. Just accept it, get through it, and know that you're actually doing your body good. And you'll finish faster than trying to just exert that power to just keep running.
Yeah, and even them sometimes, you know, if the course dictates it, they're not too proud to take a walk. I think it was Sage Kennedy. I've had all three. I've had Ian and Sarah and Sage on the show in the way back days. And I think it was Sage who said, you know, basically what you just said, if I can walk up the hill just as fast as I can run up it, why in the heck would I try to run it? Like, I'm conserving energy and I'm losing zero time. Like it's such a no-brainer when you put it that way.
Absolutely. So I have the opportunity to meet Sarah McRae in about a month from now at Badwater 135. She's racing it and I'll be pacing, crewing Allison Miller. So I'm excited to get to meet her in person and see her abilities out there, especially in a race that's a lot different than anything that I've ever been a part of. So it'll be really cool to get to meet her.
Yeah, she's awesome. You're gonna enjoy your time with her for sure. And like you said, experience something that's totally different. Good luck running through Death Valley in the dead of summer. It's one of those things that I think would be cool to do, but it's not high on my list. Like it'd be a cool story afterwards, but in the moment, not
right.
So much fun.
Right.
Oh, goodness. So shifting gears a little bit one last time before we wrap up today, Jason, talking about kind of some of the diet stuff and what you do from a plant-based perspective. It's pretty clear if you look at especially your Instagram that's a big part of what you do.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, your success in the sport. When did you, kind of decide to go plant-based? Is that something that's long been lifestyle growing up as a kid? Or was that a decision that you made, you know, once you got into endurance sports, and what caused the if so, what caused you to switch your focus on what you ate?
Yeah, definitely not as a kid. We're Puerto Rican, and so pork is a big part of the diet. That's always been there. But no, about 7 or 8 years ago, just doing all this training, and I'm like, man, things are just not where I would think they should be. Why don't we do a little tweak here and a little tweak there? And it became something where I tweaked my diet and eliminated. At first, it was going to be all meats except for fish and then it just became too much of a pain, in all honesty. And I was like, forget it. Let's just drop the fish too. And then it kind of became, my friends will tell you that I have ODD, which is objectional defiance disorder. So when people are like, well, you can't do these things and not eat a hamburger or, you know, a steak. And I'm like, yeah, watch me. And it just became one of those things where I was like, yeah, I can do this. And my body felt better. I felt like I was recovering faster. Recognized that I didn't have any cravings for red meat. I will say for like about a week, maybe 10 days, I wanted chicken wings. But really what I learned was I just wanted that spicy vinegar. And so you can make buffalo sauce and put it on anything else. Right. And then it just became one of those things where I don't even think about not having meat anymore. It's just not part of the diet. I've gotten through all of these events, no injuries, you know, racking up 4,000 bike miles a year, racking up 100 plus swim miles a year, racking up 1,600 to 1,700 run miles a year, weight training, all of that stuff, and no injuries, nothing along those lines. And so just making sure that, you know, what I'm putting in my body is good stuff. Because look, you can be vegetarian / vegan and still not be healthy.
Right.
So let's not equate the two. Let's not, oh, you're a vegetarian, so you're automatically healthy. That's not necessarily the case. If I want to get out there and I want to race, and I have another motto, if the bib is on, the race is on, which means I'm not going out there to just, you know, lollygag through the start finish line. I got to make sure I'm fueled properly. Got to make sure I'm eating timely, recovering properly so that I can, you know, when that alarm clock goes off, get up and go out there. I think I've been a little bit more creative with my dishes and what I've been able to cook and make for myself without having the standard to fall back on of steak and potatoes, let's say. I just think, and having a mixed diet, so eating from different cultures, Ethiopian, Italian, Greek, Latin, all of those different ways that people prepare food, I think has helped me too, and allows me to continue to get out there and train and race for these long course distances.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in the food is fuel type of mentality, and that you know, if we want to perform well, we've got to eat well. But as I say that, now I'm about to throw myself under the bus, because I'm also well aware that as much as I believe it, and I truly, truly do, I don't eat as many vegetables as I probably should. You know, if you held me down, I'd be hard pressed to say that there's much of a chance that I would ever give up meat completely. But I'm very willing to, and actually desire to eat more plants. I mean, it's something that I really want to do. And kind of like I mentioned, I think in the intro, that you know, not only are you doing it for your performance, but you also are concerned, at least from what the website said, of making sure that the food tastes good as well.
Yeah. Oh God. Yes.
So I would be curious. Of you know, you kind of hinted at it just now with different cultures and combining different flavors and whatnot, but is that really kind of the secret of making, you know, quote unquote boring vegetables, you know, taste good, is to not just always just steam them and that's it, but like actually do something else to them, or maybe just saute, like that's my go-to, either steam it or saute it. And like, it's not that I dislike them, but it's just like, you know,
right,
it's kind of a side instead of maybe what it should be, more of a focus, because of all the health benefits to it. And I'm always looking for ways to quote unquote spice things up. So what can you do to help me to get off the off the sidelines and start being a bit more plant focused with what I'm eating?
Find the spices at your local grocer. Yeah, absolutely. It's no different. And you may not have this problem, Dan, but I know for me, when I was eating meat, I was like, ugh, grilled chicken again, like chicken and rice. It's just grilled chicken. It's not a big, nothing's different here. But yeah, go to your spice aisle and find spices and be willing to make, I don't want to call them mistakes, but be willing to make bad food, right? Be willing to make something that you eat it and you're like, this is absolutely disgusting, and throw it out and order a pizza. Don't be afraid in the kitchen, you know, spice it up, find, buy something every time you go, which is not typical of what you would pick up. Maybe it's turmeric, or maybe it's ginger, or maybe it's a rutabaga, or, you know, something that you're not typically buying constantly, and just add it in. And again, be willing to make a mistake. Be willing to say, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to try to make it and see if it tastes good. And if it doesn't, I'll throw it out and I'll place an order. I mean, we all have access to menus on our phones these days that, you know, you could have Uber Eats deliver a dish in about 10 minutes. So it's not like you'd have to go back out to the grocery store again. But, you know, add the spices in there. Find different oil, sesame oil, avocado oil, coconut oil. They all have different tastes. Use that in the dishes that you're cooking, and just be willing to make mistakes. And how I started really was saying to myself, okay, I mentioned chicken wings earlier. I really like chicken wings. How do I take that buffalo sauce and what do I add it to? So think about your favorite dish. What is your favorite dish? How is that prepared? And then instead of using chicken or steak or pork, use a vegetable, a sturdy vegetable that has like a carrot or a potato or eggplant, and substitute it. And before you know it, you'll find yourself doing things that aren't ordinary for yourself, but add a different complexity to your plate and your dish. And you'll start eating more and more vegetables just from that alone, because you'll be like, oh, yeah, I never thought it would taste like this. And sure enough, there you have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can definitely, I can. One of the things that I can speak to is the power of getting something and trying it, because we've been for the last 5 or 6 or so, I don't know, it's been a while, years, members of a CSA farm where every week you just pick up whatever vegetables are there.
Absolutely.
And definitely have learned to eat some different things. And now being in Central Florida, which it still sounds backwards to me because I grew up in Michigan, so obviously quite different climate zones. But our CSA just ended because nothing grows very well in the summertime. It's too hot, too wet, too many bugs. So like now I'm going back to just having to get produce at the grocery store. Because even the farmer's markets dry up because there's nothing local to sell this time of year. I need to experiment. And like I've done it because of the CSA. Why can't I? Why am I going to start all of a sudden just falling back on the same old at the grocery store? There's other options there too. Try an error and see what happens.
Yeah, I think if you add in grains and things that are like rice and quinoa and lentils to those dishes as well, it'll add some body to your dishes and different flavor profiles that you'll start to say to yourself, okay, I don't necessarily have to have steak or pork 2 or 3 times a week. I can have this instead and feel full. Right. And know that I'm putting good fuel into my body as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing that I noticed on the website that, you know, if we haven't lost anybody yet because they're like, oh, screw it, I'm not going, I like my meat and that's just the way it's going to be. But
by the way, thanks for shouting me out on the website and having not posted in ages.
It's all right though, because like I said, there's the recipes and stuff that are there, like are inspiring. Like there were several that I looked at and I was like, that's no way that's not some type of shredded chicken or something like that. And got to look into them. So, I say all that to say this, that like, you know, if you're willing to experiment a little bit and it may take some time and your website might be a great resource to start at, like you can find ways to replace stuff that, like you said, it'll still leave you full. It'll still leave you satisfied. You can still get a lot of the same flavors. And you know, even if you're not going to give it up altogether, replace one meal a week, replace two meals a week or whatever, and see if it doesn't make a difference. And if it doesn't, no big deal. But if it does, you know, again, maybe you don't ever give it all away, but like, you know, making those subtle changes, it helps with recovery. It helps with performance, all those things. If we as runners are worried about that, it's not a stone that's, you know, it's at least worth turning it over and seeing if something helps for you. I guess what I'm trying to say.
And there's so many athletes out there that are becoming more and more plant-based that you could find on Instagram or any social media for that matter, and get inspired by them. You know, that's one of the things for me that I love, the social community on Instagram and being able to see a dish. Whether, again, I will not say, okay, since I don't eat meat, I'm not going to look at somebody's meat dish, but I'll look at the dish and say, how do I create that into a plant-based meal instead? But there are so many people out there that are doing what you said, 1 or 2 meals. They go more plant-based. And before you know it, it becomes a part of their routine. And the social media aspect of that has really helped in being able to stay inspired and motivated and be, you know, for me personally, if anybody's listening to this and has questions, by all means, send me a line. I'd be more than happy to help any way I can. But yeah, keep a lookout for those athletes. And you've got people that are bodybuilders now that are eating vegan diets or plant-based diets. So find those accounts and see what they're doing and what are they eating. If the concern really is about, you know, because the typical question is, where do you get your protein? It happens all the time. But, you know, there are so many people out there that are living that lifestyle with either plant-based or vegan diets that you can get motivated from and inspired by.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, never hurts to try. It never hurts to try. Just
no.
Just like with the strength training, just like with different training philosophies, stretching, yoga, foam rolling, like all of these things, they all contribute. And so you know, if you can clean your diet up a little bit, and like I said, I'm the first one that is guilty of this and something that I know that I need to work on. So, you know, and that's why I love talking to people like you, Jason, because it reminds me that this is something that, you know, it's ongoing, and I might be good for 2 weeks and then all of a sudden I fall back into the old habits and then it's hard to get back out of it. So, and again, same thing that parallels other areas of life and training as well. So it's something that you always need to be, I always need to be reminded of, and maybe others do as well.
Just stick it in your calendar.
Yeah.
Just put a calendar reminder in there. Eat a plant-based meal today. I mean, we talk about fueling with food, but the other parts of recovery, right? Massage are important, yoga, meditation, all of that stuff. I put that stuff into my training plan. Mm-hmm. Go get a massage every 3 weeks. Make sure you're doing core and stretch work 3 to 4 times a week. And it doesn't have to be for hours, 20, right. 30 minutes. So yeah, drop into your calendar, Denny. Eat a plant-based meal today. And you never know. It'll
yeah.
take off.
Yeah. And then, in all seriousness, then it becomes just part of the routine. It's like, it's Tuesday.
Absolutely.
So today is you know, whatever. I always have this plant-based lunch today or whatever. I mean, whatever. It just becomes part of something that you don't have to think about anymore, which is ultimately, I think, the ultimate goal when it comes to training, eating, recovery work, all those things. If they become automatic, that's the way to see continued growth in the sport.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, once it becomes so, and that kind of dovetails into the whole idea of running 100 miles, right? Once it becomes routine, it's just part of what you're doing. So again, I'm going to run 1 mile 100 times. Mm-hmm. The more routine we can make it, the better it is. I mean, I used to have people make fun of me because I would get up at 3:34, and I still do. But it was part of my routine. I get up that early. I work out for an hour, hour and a half. I feel energized, and it just becomes part of my routine. During the out season for a couple, 3 weeks when that's not happening, I can feel sluggish. And so then it just becomes, okay, put it into your calendar, make it part of your daily grind of whatever that is. Workout, again, plant-based meal, massage, yoga, meditation. One thing I do that my buddies will laugh at me all the time about is every 2 weeks I go get a pedicure. I mean, we're on our feet, we're smashing them into the ground constantly. I go to get a pedicure, I get my calves massaged, I get my toenails clipped, and it's perfectly relaxing. 9 times out of 10, I'm asleep for that hour. Mm-hmm. And I allow my body to just restore itself. So yeah, you got to do all of these things. You know, I don't know that one thing is more important than the other. I think it's a combination of them all. And if you make them routine, then it just becomes a part of your daily life. And you don't think twice about it.
Yeah, totally, totally agree. So as we're wrapping up here today, Jason, the way I like to end the conversations is with something I call a philosophical question, which can sound a little scary, but it's not really that bad, I promise. And it's, you know, it's just a simple, kind of like the introductory question, a simple question I'll throw out there. You can answer it in one or two words. You can answer it in one or two sentences. You can answer it in 10 minutes, whatever it takes you to kind of to get your thoughts out there. And that's where we'll kind of officially wrap things up today. But I'd just be curious, you know, in the decade or so that it is that you've been in endurance sports and you know, continuing to grow and push yourself and strive towards bigger things as far as time goals and whatnot. I'd just be curious to know what one or two things, because I'm going to assume there's probably more than one, but what one or two things has being an endurance athlete taught you about yourself that then you've been able to use in other areas of life? Maybe, never know, but maybe if you hadn't taken up running back in the day with the team and training stuff, would have never come to be an asset for you in your professional life or other areas of your life as well.
Yeah, I think the idea that life is hard kind of starts to fade away a little bit, and let's enjoy it because life is hard. But there are opportunities out there to enjoy life and see what's on the horizon. So, look, running 100 miles is difficult. There's no real easy aspect to it. But if I can run 100 miles, then I can make a phone call. I work in sales. I can make a phone call and get told no by a potential customer. That's mm-hmm. okay. You know, life isn't going to end there. It's not a big deal. If I'm going to go out there and ride my bike for 75 to 100 miles and push my limits, then I can easily have a conversation with a family about a difficult topic. Because once that conversation has been had, we can move on and find common ground to come around on. So I just think you start to realize that life is worth living. And there's a lot of aspects to life that we need to take advantage of. And they're not going to always be pleasant. But if you tackle them the right way, the outcomes may surprise you. And so I just think the endurance sports are a perfect microcosm for life. And people say baseball is, which, you know, if you study it, I guess it can be. But endurance sports, right? This task seems impossible, but let me start. And before you know it, you accomplish that task. And that can be, again, I work in sales. So that could be in sales, making a phone call to a customer about good or bad news. Or if it's in sports, okay, I'm going to run 100 miles, so let me take my first step. I just think that they really do teach you a lot about yourself, which can help you help other people as well see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
So not 10 minutes of philosophy, but hey.
But a great way to wrap things up and something that as I usually say after those answers, I'm not gonna muddy things up. I'm gonna get out of the way. We're gonna wrap this up and let that set on people for a minute. So once again, guys, cooktraineatrace.com is the website. All kinds of recipes and photos, and like I'm telling you, you're gonna look at some of that stuff and be like, that is not plant-based, and it is. And so maybe I'll give it a shot. Maybe you can as well. Instagram at cooktraineatrace for more food photos. If you're not hungry yet, get over there. And on the Twitters at cooktraineatrace without the A, RCE, to wrap that one up. And disruns.com/591. We'll have links, like I said, for everything that we talked about. Photos, the whole nine yards, disruns.com/591 to get to today's show notes. So, Jason, thank you for taking the time today for chatting with us a little bit. And I really appreciate it. And certainly, you know, wish you nothing but the best going forward. And who knows, maybe we'll stay in touch well enough that we can do this again at some point down the road. But thanks again for your time and all the best this year and beyond.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I absolutely would love to do this again. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Jason and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was something that we talked about today that got your attention or made you stop and think or scratch your head or ponder or whatever it was when something that we talked about kind of hit you a little bit? For me, it was from kind of early in the conversation talking about the idea of breaking things down and chunking out a race as opposed to looking at the whole thing, which can feel overwhelming. I know I've been there, you know, in a marathon where you're 5 miles deep and you're like, God, still got 21 miles to go. And maybe that's one of the reasons that sometimes my mental capacities are the thing that holds me back, is because I look at that and that sounds big. You know, I mean, yeah, I'm trained. I should be ready to go, but like, that's still a long freaking ways to go, you know, and that can be a little bit disheartening at times. And I can't even imagine what that looks like when you look at some of the longer ultra distance types of races, but it really does translate down no matter what distance you're running, you know, wherever you are in your progress in the sport. If you look at the whole big thing, sometimes, that can almost be detrimental as opposed to the idea of chunking it down and focusing on the mile you're in. And it sounds cliche. It sounds like that should be some, you know, internet meme or, you know, a Proverb Dell podcast post down the line. And who knows, maybe it will be, but, it's kind of one of those things that sounds cliche, but it's true. It works. Those type of little wisdom bits that really make a difference. So, you know, instead of looking at how much more you have to do, how many more repeats you have on your workout, how many more miles you have on your long run, how many more, you know, hours you have in your next race, just focus on the present. Chunk it down a little bit. You know, if you can chunk it down into quarters or into fifths or into tenths or whatever it is, it just makes it a little bit easier to swallow. Because instead of having 20 miles to go when you hit the 10K mark on a marathon, you've got 5 more sections of 2 miles at a time, or you've got Or I guess, let me do my math right. You got 10 more sections of 2 miles at a time, or you've got 5 more sections of 4 miles, or whatever it is. Just chunk it down, make it a little bit easier pill to swallow, and then not worry about, oh my God, still 20 more miles. It's just, all right, 2 more miles and I'll be finished with this section or this lap or whatever it is. And then just focus on running each of those sections to the best of your ability. And, you know, again, cliche, but eventually you're going to get to the finish line. So that's definitely something that I'm going to work on going forward. And I'm excited for my ultra in January, which is still a long ways away, but it's coming quick, because it's a looped course. So instead of thinking about, I've got, you know, 50K to do, I've got 7 laps or 8 laps, whatever it is. I'm excited to kind of test that mental game, that mental math in that situation, and not worry about the overall, just worry about each lap. I've got to run this one lap 8 times. I can handle that. I mean, even sitting here, it sounds a lot easier than running 50K. So that was my takeaway. What about you? Let me know what stood out to you from this episode. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And of course, you can head over to show notes for this episode and leave your comments, thoughts, feedbacks, takeaways there as well. And once again, the link for today's show notes is DizRuns.com/591. So with that, that's about the spot where we'll go ahead and stamp this one and seal the envelope and stick it in the mail, call it a day. But once again, just want to shout out DKMS. Thanks again for their support. And thank you guys for supporting them. You support them. They support me. It's a circle of life. Everybody wins. But really, ultimately, you know, it's the people that are dealing with blood cancer, blood disease, and you know, those folks that are in the battle, those folks that are supporting them, their family and friends, they're the ultimate winners in this whole situation. So head over to DKMS.org and get yourself a kit, swab around, send it back, and if the opportunity comes to save a life, do it. Do it. It'd be awesome. So anyway, thank you guys for listening. That is it for today. Hope you have a great rest of the day, and thanks for taking me with you with whatever it was you were doing today. So until next time, please be well, take good care, and we'll talk soon. See you guys.